enacted laws banning geoengineering research, while similar bills failed in 30 other states, including New York. Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced the Clear Skies Act to ban cloud seeding and solar geoengineering research nationwide. While some experts view it as an emergency option, Michael Thompson with the Alliance for Just Deliberation on Solar Geoengineering says that's a dangerous framework.
When you frame something as an emergency, that is the easiest way governments can shortcut all of the politics needed to understand what legitimate decision making would be or what just outcomes would be. It is a surefire way to shortcut a focus on justice for the most vulnerable people in climate situations.
This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
People across Washington will be celebrating National Public Lands Day this Saturday. Entrance fees to national parks and other public lands will be waived for the day. The Trump administration continues to attempt to use public lands for resource extraction, meanwhile cutting their budgets. Farah Siddiqui has more.
This Saturday is National Public Lands Day, meaning all national parks, forests, and other public lands in Washington state and across the country offer free admission. Public lands continue to face threats under the Trump administration, including increased resource extraction, funding cuts, and workforce reductions. In the face of these challenges, Devin O'Day of Black Country Hunters and Anglers says celebrating victories is especially important. He points to last June when a measure to sell off public lands was defeated in Congress.
We were able to defend against the large-scale sell-off of 2 to 3 million acres of public lands. Public lands are our shared inheritance. They're something that everyone in America owns and that everyone has a right to access.
According to the Bureau of Land Management, National Public Lands Day is the largest single-day volunteer event for public lands in the country. Washingtonians can join events ranging from habitat restoration to trail cleanups all over the state. O'Day says public land sales were removed from the federal budget reconciliation process after hundreds of thousands of people contacted their representatives to voice their dissent. He says people should care about public lands because once sold, they're gone forever. And they're not just important for the animals that call them home.
Public lands are integral to not only our way of life as we like to recreate, but really also our economies, our clean water.
The Legacy Restoration Fund, which provides funding for maintenance for national parks and other public lands, will expire at the end of the month without congressional intervention, warns O'Day. He urges the public to stay engaged in the process. For Washington News Service, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 25th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, the producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Edwin J. Vieira, Shantia Hudson, Zamon Perez, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, lovely folks like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. President Donald Trump claimed recently that the common pain relief medication, acetaminophen, brand name Tylenol, causes autism when taken by pregnant people. That's not supported by scientific evidence. Acetaminophen is taken for headaches and fevers. Other similar medications like aspirin and ibuprofen are not taken during pregnancy because they may cause complications. Fever reductions for those expecting is important. Studies link untreated fever to neural tube birth defects. Trump's erroneous claims have prompted confusion, speculation, and even more questions. To answer them is Dr. Brian Lee, a professor of epidemiology and biostatics at Drexel University. He spoke with SciLine's Sarah Whitlock and other reporters about autism and maternal medication use.
So you study how prenatal medication use affects children's neurodevelopmental outcomes. What can you tell us about any link between autism and the use of acetaminophen, which is the active ingredient in Tylenol, during pregnancy?
So our study, published last year in JAMA, looked at 2.5 million pregnancies and followed the moms and the children for up to 20 years in Sweden. And what we found was a two-part story. So at first, when we looked at the kids of users, acetaminophen users versus non-users, we found a slight statistical increase in risk of autism and ADHD. But association is not causation. And we wanted to look at this further. When we look at users versus non-users, this is kind of an apples to oranges comparison because the users are so different in many ways. People who take acetaminophen are different because they are sicker. They have a medical condition that needs treatment. So right away, that's one thing that differentiates between users and non-users. So infections during pregnancy, fevers, pregnancy pain. And another thing, the big elephant in the room for neurodevelopmental disorders is genetics. Autism is a highly heritable condition. And genetics, when you just look at users versus non-users, it sort of ignores that aspect. So the second part of our story was that we wanted to look at whether or not familial factors like genetics could potentially explain the statistical association. And so we looked at siblings born to the same mother. So, but one sibling was exposed and the other sibling was unexposed. And when we did it this way, the apparent risk completely flatlined and disappeared. In other words, there was no increase in risk of autism or ADHD associated with acetaminophen use. And what that told us was that familial confounding factors such as maternal genetics were likely explaining the apparent statistical association.
Gotcha, thanks so much. So if we change gears slightly, is there any known link between a mother receiving vaccines during pregnancy and a child going on to develop autism?
The numerous studies to date on that topic have shown over and over again that there does not appear to be a credible evidence base to support that association.
Thanks so much. And we also heard today about folic acid and leucovirin, a drug that is derived from folic acid. Can you tell us a little bit about what is known and what is being studied about folic acid and autism?
So first of all, folic acid is an incredibly important nutrient that we know affects neurodevelopment. It's been 30 years plus since folic acid deficiencies were linked with neural tube defects. So the idea that folic acid is somehow important for neurodevelopment, that's not, no one is questioning that. The difficulty with promoting leucovorin at this time is that the existing evidence for leucovorin for treatment or alleviation of autism symptoms is remarkably premature. There's only been a handful of very small studies which have some methodological issues, but no evidence, no therapeutic recommendations, in my opinion, should be made based on this really preliminary evidence. In short, more research is needed.
That makes a lot of sense. And is it true that rates of autism diagnosis are increasing? And if so, how much are they increasing? And can you briefly describe some of the reasons why scientists think that this is happening?
Sure. So It's not under debate. Rates of autism diagnoses are increasing. A large part of this is, of course, going to be due to increasing awareness, changing diagnostic criteria, and just better recognition of autism symptoms in schools. And so I think the part that's up for debate is whether or not environmental factors are contributing to this increase. And certainly, I don't think most scientists are ruling that aspect out. But I think as far as, pointing the finger at acetaminophen, I don't think that's a credible suspect.
That makes a lot of sense. If a mother gets a fever during pregnancy, we do know that that poses risks to the fetus. What does the research say about which is worse for the fetus, a mother having untreated fever during pregnancy or one who's using Tylenol to treat their fever?
Thanks, that's a really great question. And this is the part where my limitations come in. I'm not a clinician, so I can't speak for this, but this is one of those areas where talk to your doctor about this if you are concerned. But fevers are a known quantity as far as potential adverse effects. And certainly the evidence base for fevers being harmful is a lot stronger, in my opinion, than for acetaminophen being harmful, at least at recommended doses, I should clarify.
My name is Karen Wright. I'm with KMSU Radio. It's independent public radio in Minnesota. And my question is, have there been studies and research on mothers who use mental health medications during pregnancy related to autism, whether it's, I guess, any kind of mental health? Because a lot of them are classified as more harmful in some cases. And clinician will give it to the mother if it's more warranted that she would harm herself versus the harm of the baby.
That's an excellent question. So there has been indeed a number of studies looking at mental health medications during pregnancy and child autism. Our team has done several, in fact, but the majority of studies and the consensus seems to point towards no increase in risk associated with antidepressants, for example, which is probably the most studied mental health medication. Other studies have looked at antipsychotic use and have also concluded that there's no apparent increase in risk. One additional note is that the maternal mental health condition has been genetically associated with other mental disorders, including autism. So this is one of those things that studies try to tease apart. Is it the medication that is, linked with autism, or is it actually the mental health condition being treated? And that's a very difficult thing to tease apart, but the majority of studies suggest that it's not the mental health medication that is, that there's no apparent increase in risk associated with that.
I'm Shelley Schlender. I'm with KGNU Boulder, Denver in Colorado. There's a recent Cedars-Sinai study about Tylenol and ADHD and autism that contradicts your study. In that study research paper, it did indicate some reasons why there were thoughts that Tylenol drugs could cross the placenta and increase, I think it was inflammation. It's a very different result than your study. Can you comment on that?
Certainly. So the paper you're referencing is by Prada et al., and it came out in the last month or two. And what that study was a review, a quality-weighted review of the existing evidence. In other words, it's not a new study, but rather it's a new look at old studies. And the studies, they've upweighted, they more emphasize the studies that they believe to be high quality, and they sort of disregard the studies they believe to be lower quality. And this is where scientists will disagree on, what one person perceives to be high quality, another person might not believe or agree with. And so the conclusions that they reach in this paper are not necessarily what other scientists would agree on. Now, as far as the animal evidence goes, that's actually quite mixed as well. I'm not an animal expert, but my reading of the literature suggests that this is not at all a unanimous sort of a, oh, if you give acetaminophen to a pregnant rat, you're going to cause rat autism or anything of that sort. The study, in my opinion, is a fairly selective, cherry-picked analysis of the evidence to date.
Amy Ney here from Fox 13 News in Salt Lake City. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time and your expertise on this matter. A question regarding this announcement. Does this change current recommendations at all for pregnant women? I spoke to a local pharmacist and he said it's still early in these stages for this link and more needs to be done before he would go as far as changing that. Is that something that you would agree with?
I believe current recommendations at this point are lowest dose possible for the shortest time possible. And I don't think anything changes with any, pronouncement by the government. If you ask the expert clinician bodies like the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology or any number of other expert sort of bodies, they've all reached the conclusion that there's no strong evidence to support that acetaminophen used during pregnancy increases risk of autism or ADHD.
Hi, Dr. Chris O'Connell from Fox 29 here in Philadelphia, probably cross town from you. Go Birds.
Yep. Go Birds.
I'm literally sitting here as we speak, looking at the White House press conference. You know, as a scientist, how do you reconcile the fact that patients may be getting mixed messages from the science community and then the White House? I mean, President Trump saying today taking Tylenol is not good for pregnant women. He said that no less than three times. How do you reconcile? What should patients be wondering tonight?
I think you bring up an excellent point. Anytime a different voice is added to the conversation, it causes a bit of confusion, especially if the messaging is completely different. And you've seen this with vaccines and the recent advisory committee decisions on the MMR vaccine, for example. And it's the same sort of chaos that's being introduced here with the science. To date, acetaminophen remains the safest alternative for pain relief medication, and it's unclear what exactly would replace that if, this were somehow regulated in a way that, or pregnant women were advised to stop using it. It's an excellent question. There's a lot of evidence being spouted. And as far as the quality of the evidence, let's just say that the quality isn't necessarily all high quality. And scientists like me are trying to cut out some of that noise, but it's an incredibly difficult decision and task for folks to understand this. I think what people should take away from all of this is that physicians remain the sort of the keystone in terms of being the best source of information, because they are the ones who have to process the scientific information. The average American out there shouldn't have to deal with that responsibility. So talk to your physician if you have questions and ask questions. I think that's the number one recommendation. But the bottom line so far is that unless there's new evidence that's coming out to say otherwise, the expert clinical bodies out there do not find any strong reason to believe that acetaminophen causes autism or ADHD.
Karen Wright from Minnesota Independent Public Radio. And my question is, how has what's been being done with the cuts to CDC and all these other cuts been affecting your research and other research related to science and how it's going to impact what's I guess, the information that we're finding or not finding out, because it's, I guess, it's not being done, because I know I'm at a university and a lot of the grants and things have disappeared. So how is that impacting you as a scientist and others as well?
That's an excellent question. And, you know, we try and keep politics out of science as much as possible, but certainly this chaos from above has filtered down to the university level, and funding disruptions and cuts have been extremely disruptive. And it's difficult to pretend that this hasn't affected the science that we do on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, I've had it better than other colleagues who've had their funding completely cut off or have lost jobs. But, you know, I think any upstream effect to the NIH or CDC is going to filter downstream to not only researchers, but the communities that they serve.
Thank you. So what do we know about the genetic drivers of autism, and how strong is the body of evidence for those causes?
So the genetics for autism is a complicated topic, but what we do know on a very basic level is that a lot of autism is familial in nature. So for example, if you have a set of identical twins, the probability that if one has autism, that the other has autism is extremely high. It's not 100% high, but it's very high. And from anecdotal observations like that to more larger genetic studies, we are starting to have a clearer picture that there are certain very strong single genetic mutations that predispose to autism risk, but that there also are hundreds or if not thousands of other smaller genetic variants that are contributing to risk. So the long story short is that this is not a monogenic condition, but rather much like other complex conditions like human height or depression. There are a large number of contributing genetic variants. And we're hopeful that the next studies out there are going to shed more light on this.
Hi, Martin Davis from the Fredericksburg Advance, local media company outside of Washington, D.C. One of the things that I hear very often is that critics who back what the president is saying today will point out that autism rates in the U.S. are much higher than they are in Europe. What do you know about that, and how would you explain that?
I happen to do research in Sweden, and the rates there are quite high. But in general, anytime you have discrepancies in disease or disorder or any sort of conditions between countries, it's easy to hypothesize factors that might be different between the countries. But for something like autism that has such a high genetic component to it, we would expect to see that that the prevalences are going to be roughly the same where you are after you account for different things like different diagnostic systems and what have you. So, you know, earlier in the press conference, I think President Trump mentioned that the Amish have no autism. And that's not necessarily the most credible claim, but if there were any data to support that, well, what's more likely to happen is that, you know, people who might be Amish are going to be less likely to seek medical care, which also would result in less chance at getting an autism diagnosis. So these sorts of things are at play, and it's not really easy to just point the finger at, say, oh, this country or this community has higher prevalence, because there are other factors contributing to the higher prevalence.
That makes a lot of sense. We're going to go back to a question that we got a little bit earlier from Ari Haight. They are a reporter at WPBF ABC 25 in West Palm Beach. Their question is related to what we were just talking about, and it is that the president mentioned that there are no cases of autism in the Amish community and in Cuba. He says that's because they don't have access to Tylenol. Can you address that, and is that true?
To the best of my knowledge, I haven't seen any evidence to support that. these assertions. And as I mentioned before, there are a lot of contributing factors to whether or not prevalence of autism is higher in one community than in another. And things like access to healthcare, access to autism diagnostic services is going to play a large role in whether or not there is going to be a higher prevalence in a community or not.
Thank you. Our next question is from Camilla Williams. Camilla, if you can go ahead and unmute and say your name, your outlet, and your question, please.
Hi there, I'm Camilla Williams with WTKR News 3 in Norfolk, Virginia. My question is, could this information now contribute to the increase in maternal mortality rates and the trust people have in this now new recommendation?
I can't speak about maternal mortality, but what I will speak about that is it's almost certain that this is going to cause a lot more confusion when you're receiving fragmented and dissenting messaging from our public health officials. And so again, this is where I would hope that personal physicians are able to cut through that noise and help their patients receive the best care that they can get.
This is Shelley Schlender from KGNU Boulder, Denver, Colorado. You indicated that genetics are a big factor in autism. What influences the genetic expression? What are factors that are known, like are there medications that do increase the risk of autism if a mother takes them while she's pregnant? Are there factors about somebody having certain other illnesses? Are there other things that you can say are in the environment that affect whether or not someone with a genetic predisposition is more likely to have autism?
That's an excellent question. And in general, what I'll say is that for complex disorders, for example, heart disease, it's very rare that you can just say that, oh, this example of heart disease is going to be caused by, you know, X, Y, or Z genetic mutation. We know that genes don't live in isolation. We are exposed to genes, our genes, we are exposed to the environment. And the joint contributions of these two is something that hasn't been necessarily well studied. So I think this leads to the larger point that, you know, just because our study and others have found no credible evidence to support that acetaminophen causes autism or ADHD doesn't mean that the door is closed on scientific inquiry. I mean, the example I often use is everyone knows that smoking causes lung cancer, but that's not to say that that line of inquiry is completely shut. You know, we know that some folks can smoke two packs a day for 20 years and never come down with lung cancer. Why is that, right? And it's something about their individual physiology, their genetics that might be protecting them. And so these are like the kinds of scientific inquiry that I hope that discussion like what came out today would foster, and not necessarily any more sort of you know, false messaging, like along the lines that, oh, vaccines are causing autism.
That was Dr. Brian Lee, a professor of epidemiology and biostatics at Drexel University, speaking about autism and maternal medication use. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, this is Peter Himmelman. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO every